the questionnaire asks about menstrual history. We know that when a woman had her first menstrual period does influence risk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to HIMSCast. My name is Andrea Fox, and I'm senior editor of Healthcare IT News, a HIMSS media publication. I'm here today with Dr. Eric Brown, surgical oncologist and breast multidisciplinary team co-lead at the Kermanos Cancer Institute and assistant professor of surgery at Wayne State University School of Medicine. We are going to dive into identifying patients at high risk of breast cancer with risk modeling. Women have a 1 in 8 chance of developing breast cancer over their lifetimes, according to the American Cancer Society. But could artificial intelligence surface patients likely to develop the disease that so often stays hidden from annual mammograms? Eric is going to help us answer that question and how risk assessment software can result in earlier detection of breast cancer. The Kermanos Cancer Institute, which is part of McLaren Healthcare and is the largest provider of cancer care and research in Michigan, is one of the first cancer hospitals to deploy artificial intelligence-driven risk assessment software to better serve patients at high risk of developing breast cancer. Eric, welcome to HIMSCast.
Thanks, Andrea. Appreciate you asking me to come on.
So what is happening at the Kermanos Cancer Institute during Breast Cancer Awareness Month 2023?
Well, as you can imagine, this is a very busy month for the breast cancer team at Kermanos. We've had a lot of events going on. We partnered with the Detroit Tigers, and we had messaging at their games. We had Kermanos navigators at the game scheduling patients for their mammogram. We had a Screening Saves Lives event that had over 400 people. We partnered with the radio station and had patients. We had doctors, navigators, all as guests of the show, just raising awareness of breast cancer and what Kermanos has to offer.
That's terrific. So aside from saving lives, what is your superpower and how does it play into your work?
Well, I'm not a superhero, and I don't know that I have superpower, but I certainly, I admire the patients, to be quite honest with you. I know it sounds kind of corny, but they are really my true heroes. You know, you see people with the new diagnosis, and their life has changed forever, and appreciating that allows, I think, a better dialogue in terms of treatment management and long-term follow-up for those patients when you become kind of part of their family. And, you know, your patients that are diagnosed are faced with a huge task in front of them. It's like standing in front of a mountain. And when you keep cheering them on, telling you will get to the other side of this mountain, I think patients really see the strength that they have within themselves. And I'm always in awe of that ability to roll up your sleeves and get going.
Reaching the point of survivorship is very important to those afflicted with breast cancer and other cancers.
For sure.
What is the risk assessment platform you are using and how does it work? Is it just for breast cancer?
Well, we use a platform from Volpara Health, and risk assessments have been done for years. There are calculators that you can find online where information's put in the calculator and it identifies a person's risk of developing breast cancer at 5 years and in their lifetime. What the platform allows is for multiple risk assessment tools to be combined into one screen. So patients' information can be entered and you will get a printout of a number of different risk models and their 5-year and lifetime risk. It does identify patients at risk for getting breast cancer, also endometrial cancer, pancreatic and colon cancer. So far, we've implemented just the breast cancer screening as we kind of get the kinks out and iron out the issues of integration within the electronic medical record and communication to the referring doctor and patient.
Okay. So how does it work when a patient comes in?
So the best place to identify women at high risk is at the time of their screening mammogram. And any woman that has had a mammogram knows that when you get there, there's a small little form that you fill out talking a little bit about family history, which kind of gives the radiologist a little bit of a background in terms of that generic risk. The platform institutes a few additional questions that literally will add maybe another 2 to 3 minutes for the patients to fill out. And they do it while they're waiting for their screening mammogram. The information is input on an iPad, which directly inputs the data into the tool. The radiologist then enters the patient's breast density, which is an assessment made at their mammogram. And from that, the software will generate the risk models and their appropriate risks at 5 years in lifetime. Then the software allows a letter to be formulated that is sent directly to the referring doctor as well as to the patient. So these women come in, they get their screening mammogram, they leave. The information is relayed to the patient and to their primary care physician, who it's extremely important for us to keep them in the patient care loop. This patient has been identified at high risk. We have this to offer if you are interested. And then those patients can be navigated into what we define as our women's wellness program. At that visit, the patient is seen by a nurse practitioner, the risk is discussed, and a treatment and really high-risk screening plan is put before them.
Okay. So what kinds of questions are on this questionnaire? You know, there's common questions handed out at preventive mammogram screenings. How does it go a step beyond?
Sure. The risk assessment models all utilize family history, of course. And that's always been really the weakness in identifying high-risk patients, because you'd go to your doctor, he'd know that your mom had breast cancer. That was a relatively easy way to identify somebody who might be at high risk. The questionnaire asks about menstrual history. We know that when a woman had her first menstrual period does influence risk. The age at which the first term pregnancy was had also inputs that data and influences risk. Nalapras women, women who have never been pregnant, are at some slight additional risk. Have you taken estrogen supplementation, birth control pills? Have you had any surgeries before? And more than just breast cancer, what other cancers are in your family? Pancreatic, for example, melanoma. You could be at risk to carry a genetic mutation and really have no risk of breast cancer in the family, but other cancers. Those cancers can be associated with genetic mutations that also can imply a risk for breast cancer. So this information is all easily inputted to the system, and then the identification of high-risk patients can be easily made.
What? So is the use of the software part of your everyday practice, and how does it help you decide the course of action?
Sure. So I think that the risk assessment is the part of all breast providers' practice. We use, as a surgical oncologist, the risk of carrying a genetic mutation, because when we see patients, essentially they're going to need surgery. So I don't typically see a patient after they have a screening mammogram unless they've been diagnosed. But their treatment can be affected by whether or not they might carry a gene that caused the breast cancer. So that bit of information is very helpful to me. I think on the grander scale, these are patients that are identified as needing supplemental imaging because of their risk. So women that are not diagnosed with breast cancer, but identified at high risk can be identified through the software and then put into a program that they're not only getting their mammogram once a year, but perhaps some additional or supplemental imaging, like MRI of the breast or screening breast ultrasound. As we know, early detection saves lives. It's not just a cliche, it's a reality. And if somebody's at high risk to develop breast cancer, screening them once a year might not be enough to identify them early. Identification of breast cancer early not only means better long-term survival, but many times it means less treatment to cure that breast cancer. So identifying the high-risk patient is much more a part of a primary care physician's daily routine. When they see Mrs. Smith for a physical and say to her, "I got your mammogram, it was fine, but you know you're identified at high risk. I want you to go see the wellness program, get plugged in with somebody who can perhaps monitor you more closely because your risk is higher."
Got it. It makes me think of, preventive surgeries are an option for people that are defined high risk. Are you finding that more of the patients are opting for preventive surgeries?
That's a great question, and it really depends. Certainly, when somebody carries a genetic mutation that implies sometimes a very, very significant lifetime risk, upwards of 70% chance in somebody's lifetime, we tend to see more preventative surgery in that context. In the non-genetic carrier but high-risk patient, those patients tend more towards screening and high-risk screening with supplemental imaging. Again, I think the biggest benefit of having a program like this is knowing how many high-risk patients didn't know they were high-risk because they didn't have a super strong family history, but maybe a prior biopsy put them at high risk and they didn't know. So they're getting mammograms once a year when perhaps they would benefit from additional imaging. They have family history of melanoma and didn't think that maybe there was a breast cancer gene that could be associated with that, so never thought twice. The best way to identify high-risk patients is before they get diagnosed. The best time to identify genetic mutation carriers is before they get diagnosed. When you make the diagnosis of carrying an abnormal gene after they've been diagnosed with breast cancer, it failed because you'd identify them, they already have the cancer. You'd rather identify it ahead of time so you can do something proactively.
Amen to that. So what are the results of its use for the Karmanos Cancer Institute's patient population, including men who are at risk for male breast cancer?
Sure. So we started the program and implemented it. It took a good 6 months. There's a lot of moving pieces. As a doctor, we don't know all the moving pieces that go behind the scenes. And there's just a tremendous team that worked on implementing this process because it has to be integrated into the electronic record. Everybody needs to know their responsibility. We need to be able to communicate to the primary care doctor. How do we do that? How do we let patients know? So since that time, we've screened about 7,000 patients and we've identified about 700 at high risk, which is right around what the average should be, which is about 10%, maybe a little bit higher, that are identified at overall high risk. From that, we've already had patients getting supplemental imaging. We've had patients that have seen our genetic counselors because their risk is not only the high risk in general, but the high risk of carrying a genetic mutation. So they get funneled over to the genetic counselors for a session and perhaps genetic testing. We've instituted the program in only two of our centers so far. because again, if you bombard the entire system when the kinks aren't worked out, you can only imagine what kind of a disaster that could be. But the plan is over time to begin to institute this program at other sites throughout the state of Michigan. You did ask a question about men, I apologize, but as you know, men, we don't typically get screening mammograms, so we're not going to be identified with the software per se, but genes can be passed from women to women, from women to men, from men to men. So if dad carries the breast cancer gene, they can pass it to daughter. If dad's sister happened to get a risk assessment, gets identified as being at risk for a genetic mutation, gets tested and is positive, her family should get tested, including brothers or dads or uncles. And so it does reach men, maybe more indirectly than directly. But again, so many women don't recognize that they're at high risk. And this is a simple way, because they're getting their mammograms, or they should be anyway. So the capture point, if you will, is an easy one. And then what flourishes from there, whether it be a high-risk visit, whether it be seeing a genetic counselor, that can have a trickle effect throughout the entire family.
Hey. So how do payers view the data from the risk assessment model when you order additional imaging and labs for a patient that may not match their current guidelines?
So most of the insurance companies actually really like risk assessment tools. For example, supplemental imaging like breast MRI requires insurance authorization. And the authorization for high-risk screening requires a woman to have a lifetime risk of greater than 20%. And you can't just eyeball it and estimate. You need data. So each of the risk models that is implemented within the software gives you that information. So if you get an MRI ordered on Mrs. Smith and you say that her risk model X is a lifetime risk of 32.1%, it's easy. They'll approve that. They have no leg to stand on not to. So the guidelines are supplemental imaging in women whose lifetime risk is greater than 20%. This is a data-driven, scientific way of calculating it.
Perfect. Thanks again for joining us, Dr. Eric Brown, breast multiply dyspareunia team co-lead at the Komarnos Cancer Institute.
I appreciate you asking me, Andrea. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure. And thanks to you and our audience for listening to this episode of HIMSCast. We encourage you to rate and review us. And if you like what you hear, subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Play. Thanks again, and have a great day.